Where is that book that's been written on the board? Speaking from the fifth canto, but since they're written on the board, I will just read the verse together. Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, chapter 12, text 27. O immortal one, this unique airplane has been sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped by selected prayers and who is the chief of all living entities. You are quite worthy to board such a plane. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, according to astronomical calculation, along with the pole star, there is another star, which is called Shishumar, where Lord Vishnu, who is in charge of the maintenance of this material world, resides. Shishumar or Dhruvaloka can never be reached by anyone but the Vaishnavas, as will be described in the following verses, in the following shlokas. The associates of Lord Vishnu brought the special airplane for Dhruva Maharaj and then informed him that Lord Vishnu had specially sent this airplane. The Vaikuntha airplane does not move by mechanical arrangements. There are three processes for moving in outer space. One of the processes is known to the modern scientists. It's called Ka Poto Vayu. Ka means outer space and Poto means ship. There is a second process also called Ka Poto Vayu. Ka Poto means pigeon. One can train pigeons to carry one into outer space. The third process is very subtle. It is called Akashapatan. The Akashapatan system is also material. Just as the mind can fly anywhere one likes without mechanical arrangement, so the Akashapatana airplane can fly at the speed of the mind. Beyond this Akashapatan system is the Vaikuntha process, which is completely spiritual. The airplane sent by Lord Vishnu to carry Dhruva Maharaj to Shishumar was a completely spiritual, transcendental airplane. Material scientists can neither see such vehicles nor imagine how they fly in the air. The material scientist has no information about the spiritual sky, although it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Paras Tashmat Tu Bhava Anna. So, Dhruva Maharaj was about to leave his body, and here we can see how a Vaishnava actually leaves this planet. A living entity in the material nature, according to the arrangement of the superintendence of the material nature, like the demigods, and finally Mahamaya herself, the superintendent of material creation, makes or awards different types of bodies to different living entities according to his guna and karma. The living entities in the material nature act, and as a result of their action, they produce reactions. And those reactions actually create his subtle body, gives a shape to his subtle body. Like the subtle body, consisting of mind, intelligence, and false ego. Mind, intelligence. Shuddha, why don't you change the wire for this? I have been telling you.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
No, but these cables are not good and this connection is not good. Anyway, I mean, I think everybody can hear my voice. Sorry. So, living entities, as they act in the material platform, on the material platform, accordingly they get the reaction, and this action reaction of living entities give the shape to his subtle body. His subtle body, consisting of mind, intelligence and false ego, which is actually, as long as the living entity is in the material nature, the subtle body cannot be discarded altogether. Like a gross body, at one time the living entity just discards the gross body and leaves. But that doesn't happen with the subtle body. The subtle body, consisting of mind, intelligence and false ego, is subjected to transformation, not destruction as such. So, as one acts, like first of all, what actually drives a living entity to act on the material plane? The driving force behind his action is his desire. And the desire for materialistic activities is exploitation of the material nature, trying to enjoy the material nature. So when a living entity wants to enjoy or exploit this material nature, then he becomes active on the material nature. So he desires, and then as a result of his desire, the first action actually begins, or the successive action also are subject to one's desire, material desire to lord over, desire to exploit for one's own enjoyment. So when a living entity thus becomes involved in material activities, he, because he is acting independently for his sense gratification, becomes liable to the reaction of those actions. And those reactions of his action remain in the subtle body, in the form of karmic seeds. And accordingly, in a way we can say that these karmic reactions give a specific shape to the living entity's subtle body. As one acts accordingly, he gets his subtle body, or his subtle body takes the shape. Just to give an example, sometimes we see that when we do something good, then we feel elated, our mind becomes elated, our mind becomes very happy. And sometimes when we do some bad action, when we do something bad, something wrong, although no one saw us, our mind feels heavy. Doesn't it happen? So in this way we can see how our actions keep or leave its impression on our minds. And in this way, all our actions, Jai Shri Shri Radha Radhanath Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki, in this way, our action gives the shape to our subtle body. And then the subtle body, after the gross body dies, after the gross body becomes uninhabitable for the living entity, then the subtle body carries the spirit soul into the next appropriate gross body. Now these gross bodies are awarded by material nature through a gross arrangement. Mainly there are three four types of arrangement. There are udbhijas, like the living entity gets a body through the seeds, like trees and plants. Their bodies are from the seeds. Then shvedaja. Some living entities, they are born out of perspiration. Or they are born out of water. They get their body from water. Then, andaja, some living entities get their bodies from eggs, like the bird. And some living entities, and the other is called jarayuja. Jarayuja means fetus, born out of fetus, the mother. So the most advanced bodies are actually the bodies that are born in the wombs of the mothers. And of them, the human body is considered to be the best. So in this way, the living entity gets different types of bodies by the different types of gross bodies by the arrangement of the material nature. So this gross body has certain duration. It's born, it remains, it lasts for some time, and then at some point it dies. Dies means at some point the living entity leaves that body. Just at one point the living entity leaves the gross body. So in this way the gross body has its birth and death, but the subtle body doesn't have. The subtle body goes through different types of transformation. Like for example, a living entity has got a human body, but in that human body he starts to act like a dog. Starts to act like an animal, say like a dog. Then those activities of the living entity will give him the shape of the subtle body of a dog, subtle body, gradually. And then what will happen because of that attachment to a dog or doggish activities, a living entity at the time of his death will think of a dog. And that thought will carry the subtle body into the womb of a dog. And there he will be awarded what kind of a body? What kind of a body can you expect in a dog's womb? Angels? Obviously not. Like in the womb of a dog, you get a dog's body. So in this way, living entity is, living entity transmigrates from one body to another by the arrangement of material nature. Through this, two types of bodies, subtle body and gross body. Or as Krishna says, Jantra Rudhani Maya. By the arrangement of Maya, the living entity travels riding in different types of jantras, different types of machines. And the machines are this body. So, the gross body that we get is according to the subtle body. And the subtle body takes the shape according to our activities. Now, this subtle body, as I mentioned, cannot be destroyed. But the subtle body can be transformed. And the transformation of the subtle body takes place through devotional service. When you begin to act for Krishna or become engaged in devotional service, then what is devotional service? What is the definition of devotional service? Devotional service? Yes, Ramanuja.
Serving Krishna's senses, please.
Right. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchati.
Sarvapadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha shevanam bhakti vichyate. Say, a living entity must become free from all sarva upadhi vin. Haribol, what are you doing? Sarvapadhi vinir muktam, becoming free from all designation, upadhi, tat paratvena nirmalam. When one becomes nirmalam, completely free from all kinds of contamination, material contamination. What is the ultimate material contamination? The material contamination is desire for sense enjoyment. The desire for sense enjoyment causes the contaminations in the heart. It's not that the spirit soul becomes contaminated, but the place where the spirit soul is situated, that place becomes contaminated, the heart becomes contaminated. And as a result of that, his consciousness becomes contaminated. So, Shruta, you should make sure that the devotees come to the class. I mean, what business they have at the time of class? Anyway, you can find out. Like one thing I'm repeatedly requesting the devotees, please be attentive to the morning program. The purpose of our coming to the temple is to have the facility to participate in the devotional service. And if we come to the temple but do not take advantage of that, then our mission will be lost. Like morning programs, Guru Puja, Bhagavatam class. At least Prabhupada was very particular. We can compile a few quotes from Srila Prabhupada, how particular Srila Prabhupada was about these morning programs. And at one point Prabhupada mentioned that these temples are not hotels where people just come to eat and sleep. The temples are meant for practicing devotional service, and there is a specific way that it has been designed. And it's the responsibility of the management that to see that the devotees are involved in devotional service, practicing this process. Like Prabhupada is very emphatic that the GBC's business is to see that the spiritual standard is maintained in the temple. Prabhupada didn't want the GBC's to get involved in management, hand-to-hand, day-to-day management as such, hands-on management as such. But Prabhupada wanted that the GBC must be involved in the spiritual standard of the temple. That's what he must maintain. Anyway, actually I felt quite disturbed when I saw in the Mangal Arati very few devotees were present. And well, you all have a very valid excuse. There was no water. But we are not here to find excuses to abstain from devotional service. We are here to engage in devotional service. And if there is no water, please keep a bucket of water the night before so that in the morning you can have a bath. To give you an example how staunch the devotees used to be in the early days, in Germany, the devotees used to travel by buses and distribute books. And in winter it gets very, very cold. And often they didn't have water to take bath. Everything was frozen. So what they would do? They would break the ice, put that in a bucket and pour it on their bodies. And that's how they used to take bath. Outside in the open. Because they were in the buses. And because the spirit was so high, the sadhana was so strict, Krishna consciousness was spreading. You see, Krishna consciousness movement spread all over the world in 10 years' time, not for nothing. It didn't happen by chance or by accident. It happened because the devotee's inspiration and enthusiasm. The drive that was there that made the devotees, that made Krishna consciousness movement to spread. And if we become complacent, movement won't spread. It'll just become stagnant. And as Prabhupada used to point out, what happened to Gaudiya Math? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually created a very dynamic movement. Like in India, he established 64 temples. Just in India, we still don't have 64 temples. We barely have 16 temples in India today. But those days we used to have 64 temples. And such a dynamic movement he started. But gradually, it degraded or it reduced to practically nothing. Just all the temples that were there, they were there. Nothing, no new temples came up, and no preaching was going on. Maybe some temples came up, but no, hardly any preaching was going on. And what did Prabhupada tell? What happened to Gaudiya Math? Does anyone know what Prabhupada's comment was? They're just ringing the bells and having picnics. Ringing the bells means they just do some puja and then have a feast, a picnic. So, but is that what Krishna consciousness movement is meant for? Krishna consciousness movement is a very dynamic movement. It's meant to spread Krishna consciousness, give Krishna consciousness, spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And it all will depend upon how we are feeling within ourselves, how much we desire to spread this movement. Also, when you go back, why this movement became so effective? Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction came through Srila Prabhupada? Because Srila Prabhupada sincerely desired that let my Guru Maharaj's desire come true. Let this Krishna consciousness movement spread in every town and village. And as a result of that, it started to spread. And anyway, so to go back to our point that the subtle body does not become destroyed at a time, at just like the gross body. The subtle body becomes transformed. And the process that transforms the subtle body is Krishna consciousness, devotional service. So the devotional service is engaging the senses in the service of the Supreme Personality of God. So when the senses are engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then mind becomes absorbed in Krishna. Because mind also is a sense. How many senses do we have? Huh? Srihari? We actually have 11 senses. Five knowledge acquiring senses, five working senses, and one internal sense, which is considered to be the chief of all senses. It's all right.
Oh, I got it. Say that.
So, the chief sense, chief of all, the king of all the senses is the mind. And whatever the king does, the citizens follow. So in this way, when the mind is absorbed in serving the lotus feet of Krishna, then automatically the senses follow suit. Therefore, the ultimate consideration is actually the mind. Therefore, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita repeated this one verse twice. In Bhagavad Gita, only one verse has been repeated twice. Which one is that verse? Manmana bhava madbhakta. So it's so important that Krishna decided to say it twice. Why? Because that is the most important verse. Sarvadharman Parityajya is important, but more important than Sarvadharman is actually Manmana bhava. Because unless and until this mind is not absorbed, we cannot surrender ourselves unto Krishna. Because if the mind is absorbed in material objects, then we cannot surrender unto Krishna. So in order to surrender unto Krishna, we have to focus our mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, at Krishna's lotus. So, when the mind is engaged in thinking of Krishna all the time, then is the mind still material? The mind that is thinking of Krishna all the time, is it material mind? No. So what does it mean? Mind has become spiritualized. Just by thinking of Krishna all the time, the mind becomes spiritualized. When the mind is always absorbed in thinking of Krishna, then what happens to the intelligence? Tesham shatato yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogantam jena mamupojantite. Do you know what is the Sanskrit word for intelligence? Brihat? Buddhi. So what Krishna is saying here, tesham shatato yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam, that I give him buddhi yoga. His intelligence then becomes spiritualized. So now by being engaged in devotional service, the intelligence also becomes spiritualized. And in this way, when one assumes the position of a devotee or assumes the position of a servant of Krishna, then what happens? He is situated in his sarup. Sarup means his real identity. Now, when one is situated in his sarup, then where is his, what happened to his, what happens to his false ego? False ego means what? What is the definition of false ego? Anyone? Ravindra? Yes, false ego actually literally means mistaken identity. Or wrong identity, false identity. And what is that false identity? The false identity is that I am the Lord and Master. Actually, I am the servant of the Supreme Lord. But instead of thinking that I am the servant of the Lord, I think I am the Lord of everything. So that is the false ego. So one who has assumed the position of becoming a servant of Krishna, his false ego has been transformed into his sarup. And sarup means jive sarup hai Krishna nityada. What is the meaning of the word sarup? Yes, Mahashringa. Sarup means
Right.
Swarup means one's original identity, constitutional position, the real identity of the self. And that is Krishna's Swarup. Now, consider one who has engaged his mind continuously, constantly in the service of Krishna, who is always thinking of Krishna with his mind, who has received Buddhi Yoga from Krishna, and who has become situated in his spiritual identity by becoming a servant of Krishna. Where is his subtle body? Does he have a subtle body? No. His subtle body has been dissolved. And his spiritual identity, the spirit soul, is dwelling within this gross body, apparently gross body, in a liberated state, in a perfected state. So a living entity, a devotee, a pure devotee is he whose spiritual identity has become revealed, and his subtle body has worn out or dissolved or transformed into his spiritual identity. So by practicing devotional service, a living entity attains that position. Although he is dwelling in his gross body, but he is liberated. What is that verse? Nikhilashrapi avasthashu jivan mukta sauchyate. That in all situations, Nikhilashrapi avasthashu, in all circumstances, he is considered to be jivan mukta. So who is a jivan mukta? Jivan mukta means he is liberated even when he is alive. That means even when he is in his body, he is liberated. That means he is dwelling in his gross body, but his spirit soul is purified. And that situation is called, that is called Swarup Siddhi. Swarup Siddhi. Perfect, he has attained the perfection of becoming situated in his pure spiritual identity. But still he is in his material body, in his apparently gross body. But Prabhupada says that his body is also not material. At that stage, although it appears that he is dwelling in his material body, but he is not. His body is not material. His body is spiritualized. And in this respect, Prabhupada gives the example of iron rod in contact with fire. An iron rod, when it's in contact with fire, then afterwards what happens ultimately? It becomes red hot. So when the iron rod is red hot, is it iron rod or fire? It's fire. So somebody may say that no, but still it is iron. Then Prabhupada said, okay, touch it. And we'll see whether it's fire or not. So Dhruva Maharaja's situation was like that. He has received he has become Swarup Siddha. And he is still in his body, and this body has a specific duration by the arrangements of material nature. And then when the duration is over, like generally for living and for human beings it's 100 years. So when the duration is over, then he is released from the body. Generally, living entity cannot get rid of his gross body by his own arrangement. If he does, then it is considered to be the most heinous crime, committing suicide. So living entity must depend upon the material nature for the release from this growth body. And when the time comes for the growth body to leave, or for a spirit soul to leave the growth body, then he actually gets a chance to go back to Godhead. That's the time he gets the chance to become totally free from material bondage and go back to Godhead. And that's what happened to Dhruva Maharaj. When the time came for him to leave the body, a spaceship came from Vaikuntha planet, from Lord Vishnu himself. Vishnu sent the chariot or aeroplane or spaceship, whatever you call it. And there were two associates, four-armed Vaikuntha Vasis, in the chariot. And they came to invite Dhruva Maharaj to Vaikuntha Loka, to the abode of Vishnu. And this is how a living entity, this is one of the ways the living entity goes back to Godhead. And we cannot actually go to that region by any mechanical means. Prabhupada said that there are three mechanical means. Like there are three types of spaceships. But this one is beyond that, transcendental to that kind of spaceship. This is a spiritual spaceship, which cannot be designed in the material nature. Or it cannot be, one cannot reach that region by any material means. It has to be only through the spiritual means. And what is the spiritual means? What is the meaning of the spiritual means? Spiritual means surrender, dependence upon Krishna. Spiritual means is to surrender unto Krishna and depend upon His mercy. And material means depending upon our own ability. So spiritual life actually ultimately means give up our own ability, dependence on our own ability, and depend entirely upon Krishna's mercy. Other processes, like yoga process, jnana process, they are the processes of trying to do things by our own endeavor. Yogis, they by means of their own effort, they want to attain spiritual perfection. The jnanis also, by means of their own intellect, they want to reach that region. But it's not possible. The only way we can do it is by the pure spiritual means. And pure spiritual means dependence upon Krishna. So we all are here in Krishna Consciousness Movement is simply to learn how to depend upon Krishna. Actually, if we come to the movement, if we join Krishna Consciousness and still want to be the big Lord and Master, big controller, then we are simply wasting our time. We are here to depend upon Krishna, to learn how to surrender unto Krishna, and help each other to surrender unto Krishna. And that's why this verse is so important. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sarva. That is the meaning of, that's the beginning of devotion. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam, only surrender unto me. And in order to surrender, we have to give up the tendency to lord over. In this material nature, everyone is trying to lord over. That's the disease. The more materially involved one is, the more one tries to lord over. Whereas a devotee, he doesn't want to lord over. He simply wants to be a servant. Servant of sadhus, servant of guru, servant of Vishnu, servant of Krishna. That's what we are here for. We are here to serve. And more we advance, the more our area of service increases. For example, when one comes to serve then he thinks that he will only serve Krishna. That's the Kanishtha Adhikar platform. Then he begins to learns that no, one must approach Krishna through his guru. Then he thinks that he will serve only his guru and Krishna. But then when he makes further advancement, then he sees that actually he is a servant of all the Vaishnavas. At the most advanced stage, a living entity sees that everybody else is a Vaishnava, only he couldn't become a Vaishnava. Everybody else is engaged in serving Krishna, only he couldn't become a servant of Krishna. That's the Uttamadhika platform. So you can see this, how actually due to our spiritual advancement, our outlook changes. Like once Srivara Maharaj was telling me that when he joined the movement, he was thinking that he was the pure devotee. And then he realized, after studying the books and hearing from the devotees and gathering experiences, he realized that it will take long time to become a pure devotee. That he is not a pure devotee as yet. But at that time he thought that after 20 years he will become a pure devotee. And like after completing his 20 years, he felt that actually it is such an incredibly difficult job to become a pure devotee. So this is the sign of advancement. The more we advance, we don't think that we have become a pure devotee. The more we advance, more we realize that how insignificant is our position. And more we make advancement, more we become humble in this way, recognizing our insignificant position. The humble disposition of a Vaishnava is not an artificial thing. It's not a show. From within his heart, a devotee feels that how insignificant he is. So the more we make advancement, the more we realize how small we are. And finally we realize that actually our size is 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. And when we realize that we are actually 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair, then only we will be able to become more humble than a blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree. Then we'll think, who am I? But now we are thinking, oh, I am so and so. I am big sannyasi, big guru, big GBC, big temple president, big department head, big brahmachari, big. We are always thinking that we are so big. And it's so easy to think that we are so big when you are in the material platform. And people around us tell us how big we are. The mother says, oh, you are so big. The father says, you must be the biggest in this world. So this way, we are always motivated to become big. But then, we become a devotee, and then we are told that our business is not to become big. Our business is actually to become small. If we really want to make spiritual advancement, then we must become smaller and smaller and try to be the smallest. And it happens naturally. As we come closer to Krishna, as we appreciate the qualities of the devotees, then we begin to realize how small, how insignificant we are.